Welcome to 3 Yards Per Carry, a podcast covering the Miami Dolphins and the NFL. Now, here's your hosts, Chris, Alf, and Simon.
And we're on, and welcome to another edition of 3 Yards Per Carry. I'm Alfredo Arteaga. Simon Clancy is here. Chris Kaufman is here. And as always, this show is brought to you for you out-of-staters by Prize Picks. Use the promo code 5, F-I-V-E. You deposit $100, you get $100. It's the best promo anywhere in the DFS world. And of course, betteredge.com. Go to betteredge.com/5 reasons, and you get $20 just for signing up. Dolphins made some news today, guys. Now, it wasn't, nothing big, but let's start here. Jeff Wilson is evidently in their plans. They don't seem to cut guys that get restructured, okay? They're moving his cap number from $3.6 million down to $2.3. They're saving over $1 million in the cap. I guess that's your RB3. He's going nowhere. I guess they're running the whole running back room back unless something, an opportunity arises. Your thoughts on that, Simon?
Yeah, I mean, I would have kept Wilson. I think he's a good player. The coaches like him. McDaniel loves him. And people talked all offseason about, bringing in Derrick Henry, bringing in a new running back. And I've never really seen the need. I think the running back room is strong. I think the issue was the offensive line and the play calling in critical situations that made the running back room look sometimes less than the sum of its parts. You've got a big back in Chris Brooks who could move the pile at 215 pounds. We know that most are added weight, but also we saw down the stretch, especially against Dallas, when given the opportunity, Jeff Wilson was able to move the chains and pick up key first downs when we just ran the ball down people's throats. So I never understood the decision or the conversation around getting rid of Jeff Wilson. And he's this and he's that. He's a more than able, number three, really. Catches the ball well. Pass protects, play special teams, is beloved by the coaches, is a good teammate. I mean, it's an absolute no-brainer. And, it's another financial restructure that lowers the cap number down, $1.3 million? So, what's not to love about that?
Chris, they're not touching the running back room, huh?
Well, no. I suspect, this is an area where Mike McDaniel continually spins straw into gold with the running backs. So I don't know why you would deviate from that as far as letting him pick, some kind of UDFA or late round pick or something like that, just to keep the gears moving. Two things about this particular move. One, yeah, I absolutely agree with Simon. The issue was not in the running back's room. It was offensive line and play calling. In this case with Jeff Wilson, if you want to enter games, and they've done this at times, enter games knowing that this game is a good one for your downhill run game to play a part in the game plan, which they've done against the Jets before, some other opponents. This is a guy that you're going to want to, get some of the carries. That's the he may not be huge, but he is effective in certain kinds of run plays more so than some of the other guys on the roster. So he gives you the variability in your game plan, and I think that's important. The second thing is that, they're really scrounging the couch cushions for change here. When it comes to the restructures, I mean, they've gone with restructures with guys that only Durham Smythe, Jeff Wilson, guys that are only producing like a million, something like that. And at some point, elephant in the room is, they haven't restructured Tyreek Hill. And they haven't restructured Bradley Chubb. Those are the big contracts that would save a lot of money to restructure. Mm-hmm. And at some point, we got to start wondering, hey, why aren't they restructuring those guys? Why? Because it's all in the same credit card. Or sorry, that's not right. It's all going to be Miami's debt. Just because it's on one contract or another, I don't know that it makes that much of a difference, because you have to think that neither Tyreek Hill nor Bradley Chubb are going to be cut this year. Traded, probably not either that, you know, that either. So, you know, you could restructure those guys and it's fine. They're not restructuring those guys. Instead, they're restructuring these like little dinky contracts. And in order to get the breathing room that they want to operate in this part of free agency. And I have to start questioning, why do they have a big move in mind that they'll need to say, okay, now's when we restructure Tyreek Hill? Or flip side of that, the issues that Tyreek Hill has gone through recently, is that going through their head? And they're like, you know, we'd better protect ourselves here.
I think you're right, Chris. I think the Hill thing is way bigger. And I mean, this is a weekly, almost, you know, some off-field issues. And both players have got outs after next season in terms of contract outs. And it just makes you wonder, you know, is there a big move in the offing for a wide receiver? Is there a, you know, is that where they're heading? It kind of looks like that might be where they're heading in the draft. And with Chubb, you know, we'll talk about it in the second half of the show, but Laiatu Latu, the edge rusher from UCLA, is beloved by the Dolphins. And, you know, that would make a lot of sense in terms of, you know, getting rid of two extremely high earners on the roster. And sometimes, you know, as good as Hill is, I mean, we need to talk about these issues, don't we? I mean, these are, he's 30 years old already, he'll be 31 next year, and the off-season and the off-field issues seem to be piling up and piling up and piling up. And there's going to come a point where if some of these things play out, that either he gets suspended by the league or the Dolphins have to really kind of haul him over the coals. And at some point you have to say, is the struggle worth the, you know, the on-field stuff? Because
I would say that the ticking just keeps getting louder. You know, it's not that bad yet. And I don't think anything is going to happen based on anything that we currently know. But the ticking keeps getting louder, doesn't it?
But it's also about what the money is supposed to say about you. And this summer, they're going to give Waddle a lot of money. And I think that's the representative that they want going forward. And I would bet dollars to donuts that this coming season is probably Tyreek Hill's last season here.
I agree.
And also then their highly paid wide receiver will be Jalen Waddle, who is a model athlete. And that's who you want to pay your money to going forward, really.
But with the money comes responsibility as well. He's a team captain. You know, he's a responsible, you know, he's a leader of the team. He is a responsible, highly regarded player. And some of these things are harder and harder to shove under the carpet. And, you know,
that's the thing about Tyreek. He walks into the building and he's perfect. He walks out of the building and it's a mess and it's a disaster. And you're waiting for the next thing to happen, you know? And they keep escalating, if you notice.
Yeah. And it's, I mean, all the stuff about the fire, all the stuff about his wife and the divorce, this woman with a broken leg, this latest situation with the cigar or and his wife. And you just think there's a lot going on behind the scenes that doesn't look particularly pretty. And, you know, sooner or later, somebody's got to do something and say something. And, you know, he's held to a different standard and he should be. But, you know, the past kind of shows you what kind of guy he is. And I think we don't really want to talk about it as a team because, you know, he's a great player. But sometimes, he's not a good human being.
No. He's just a fabulous athlete inside of those four walls in Miami Gardens.
Yeah, I mean, I don't want to take away what he's done inside the building.
Oh, no, me neither. By any means.
Like, and not just on the field, but I think that he has been, you know, the executor, basically, of Mike McDaniel's will as far as changing the culture in the building. You know, Mike McDaniel came in with his ideas and what he likes and his general affect and everything like that. And it seemed to me almost like Tyreek Hill, you know, put that into actual action though. And, and, you know, kind of like the culture wouldn't have necessarily changed with Mike McDaniel alone. Like Tyreek Hill had that sort of impact, and I don't want to lessen that. And I also don't want to conclude anything, because a year is a long time. And if we're thinking that he's going to be here at least this year, and then maybe this could be his last year. Well, a lot can happen in that year too. And we could be sitting here this time next year being like, well, they're not going to get rid of Tyreek Hill, you know, like, I mean, a lot can happen. But I agree that, you know, the ticking gets a little bit louder. Are they thinking, well, maybe we can't afford to do this? Or is there a shoe to drop out there, you know, with another move? And then it's like, oh, there's the Tyreek restructure.
Yeah, we won't know. And the offseason is really, really young. All right, moving on. And we're going to get to the two offensive linemen that they added to the group, or the gaggle of offensive linemen that they have right now. But first, they had a meeting, or they're meeting with Phil Haynes from the Seattle Seahawks. He's a guard. All I know about him really is that he played 437 snaps last year. He's giant. He's 6'4", 322 pounds. Out of Wake Forest. He allowed 5 sacks and he had 6 penalties last year. Simon, do you have the front page on this player who is evidently visiting with the Dolphins either today or visiting tomorrow?
Yeah, I mean, I think what they're trying to do is just improve the overall, I suppose, quality of the, you know, I don't see Haynes as a starter, but, you know, he was pretty highly regarded, I think, coming out of Wake Forest. He was a third or fourth round pick. And I just think they're just trying to improve that situation and make some competition with Robert Jones and Nestor Cotton inside. You know, I think he went on IR with a toe injury. I think he's a, you know, he's a guy who's a pure guard, and I think that, like I said, you're just trying to make that. I mean, we were talking about this earlier, and Chris made a very salient point, which is kind of what we've been talking about for years, which is that it's very, very clear. And if this offseason doesn't tell you, you know, if you don't get it after this offseason, you're never going to get it. But Chris Greer, when he sat and laughed and said, "You all care about the offensive line a lot more than we do," I think that is pretty pertinent, because, you know, they do not seem to want to invest much of any resource, of any draft capital. They're not going to chase high price free agents really beyond Teron Armstead. They let go the guy that they cultivated, you know, in terms of, they drafted him in the second round with the 39th pick, and they let him walk after 4 years in Robert Hunt. I just don't think they're that interested. And I think you look at Isaiah Wynn, you look at, you know, Phil Haynes, you look at Jack Driscoll, who they brought in today from the Eagles. These are guys on short 1 year kind of prove it deals who can sort of be in the mix to back up, to start, to compete with Liam Eikenberg, to compete with Lester Cotton, to compete with Rob Jones. And, you know, we'll see where the chips fall. And I think they're happy with the fact that the offense is predicated on getting the ball out really quickly, so you don't have to block for very long. And, you know, let's just get some warm bodies in there and see where we end up. Chris, would you not agree?
No, I think that's exactly it. You know, I get the feeling more and more. We're now 3 free agencies in, right, to the new regime. 2 drafts with another one coming, and we'll see how that one goes. But, you know, something that they do a lot of is acquiring veteran offensive linemen. All right. You know, go back to the very beginning. They signed Teron Armstead as a veteran free agent. They signed Connor Williams as a $7 million a year free agent. And then, you know, fill in guys like Kendall Lamb and Brandon Shell, if you recall. They paid like just over $1 million to, and he turned in, you know, the better part of a year at right tackle. And then for the next year, Isaiah Wynn, Alf, you've talked about Graham Glasgow, you know, they may have wanted him, also a veteran. Isaiah Wynn was a second contract guy. Connor Williams was a second contract guy. And then you go to this offseason, and here they are with Aaron Brewer, a second contract guy, and now Jack Driscoll, a second contract guy, and, you know, giving a tryout to Phil Haynes and we'll see where that goes, bringing Isaiah Wynn back. It's basically free agency is their draft, you know, and free agency, they're going to look at a guy like Isaiah Wynn or Graham Glasgow, and they're $1 million, $2 million, $3 million a year kind of guys, and be like, you know, that's basically like a mid-round pick, you know, and they're going to look at guys like Aaron Brewer and Connor Williams. And, oh, you know, that's your first rounder. That's your first rounder with a few issues that you get in the second round, you know, first round ability in the second round. There you go. You know, and I think that they view free agency as their draft, and they view the draft as frankly a waste of time with their offensive linemen. And this fits exactly with everything I kept hearing. So I a lot of NFL contacts keep whining at me over and over again about how rookie offensive line coming from college ranks, just year after year, they come in less and less prepared to actually put in positive snaps in the NFL as rookies. There's just more, it's getting louder and louder, including from sources that I know to be coming from the Dolphins themselves. So I know that the Dolphins think this way. And you have to look no further back than what happened with, say, let's say Liam Eikenberg and Austin Jackson. You know, Austin Jackson, we think of as a solid right tackle now, but what was he as a rookie? He was absolute trash. You know, what was Liam Eikenberg as a rookie? I'm sorry to say, but he was absolute trash. They're taking this mindset of, you know what, we're going to let somebody else develop our guys, our offensive line. We're going to let them go through all the hard stuff, all the lumps, all the miscues that these young players have while you're trying to teach them something. And then we're just going to pick them up on second contract when they've slipped through the cracks because, you know, in the case of Jack Driscoll or Isaiah Wynn, maybe they were playing tackle and they should have been playing guard, you know, or in the case of Connor Williams, you know, maybe he should be playing center when he's been, you know, he's been playing guard this whole time. Maybe he should have been playing center. You know, Aaron Brewer, look at him. This was the first year out of the 4 years he's been with Tennessee that he really played center. And the other three years he was, you know, bouncing around the different guard positions for the most part. And so they're going to say, well, this is a 26-year-old that only finally got to play his real position. Especially in this offense. So he slipped through the cracks. So we're going to get a bargain on him. We got a bargain on Connor Williams, you know, until the ACL ruined that. They did get a bargain on Isaiah Wynn until his predictable injury history ruined that. You know, are they going to get a bargain on Jack Driscoll? They did get a bargain on low money deals to guys like Kendall Lamb and what's his name, even Brandon Shell to some degree. They're going to keep doing this, and if we're going to keep, you know, plugging them in and saying, you know, at 21 overall, we're going to get an offensive lineman, and then we're going to swing around at 55 overall, get another one. We're really going to build this offensive line with young players. You know what? I think we're going to keep getting disappointed. And either we learn or we don't.
Yeah. Alf, I think it's really, pertinent, and I think it's worth mentioning that, you know, there are two guards on the market, or there were two guards on the market that Miami could easily have hoovered up, who fit the bill, who are good, consistent players in Laken Tomlinson and Kevin Zeitler. Okay. Zeitler has just in the last hour signed a 1-year deal with the Detroit Lions, so the best, essentially the best offensive line in the league. And he's joined them. Yeah, this is a guy, most pass blocking snaps without allowing a sack from a guard in the NFL, 650. You know, in terms of availability, and this is the kind of the important thing that we talk about, over the last, well, since he joined the Bengals in 2012, he's had 1,099 snaps, 866, 799, 1,112, 1,087, 1,068, 1,091, 991, 1,003, 1,221, 1,021, 1,101. That is absolutely top line availability in terms of being able to play. Laken Tomlinson, literally since he came into the league in 2015, He's played in 16 games, 16 games, 15 games, 16, 16, 16, 17, 17, 17. So he's missed one game in his career, 8 year career.
Wow.
And, you know, so, I mean, these are guys who are available, not only available on the market, but they are available week in, week out to play and play at a good level. And I think it speaks volumes that Miami showed no interest in either of them. And yet they'll go back to the well with an Isaiah Wynn, who we know has got a chronic injury history and will almost certainly get injured again this year. We already know about the issues with Teron Armstead in terms of his injury situation. They just don't care in the same way that we as fans do. And I find it mind-boggling, but that's just the way that they've decided they're going to take it.
Yeah. On the way out here, before we go to break, Jack Driscoll, you got to figure he's going to compete at right guard. I think his tackle days are long behind him. There's something to work with there at guard. I saw a couple of games of his, and he looked all right to me. Your thoughts, Simon, on the way out here?
Yeah. I mean, you absolutely don't want him to tackle. I thought he got abused. He got abused by Bryce Huff. He got abused by Jermaine Johnson. I saw a number of his right tackle snaps today, and I just don't think that's where you're going to play him. I think, obviously, you know, in a pinch as a backup, but I think he's competing in that mix with those other guys that you mentioned earlier on to start at guard. And, yeah, I don't think, you know, anybody that's coached by Jeff Stoutland is going to be really well coached. He was essentially like the seventh offensive lineman, really, with the Eagles, when you consider obviously the starting five. They really started the season with Driscoll as the sixth, and then Tyler Steen, the rookie from Alabama, kind of became the sixth, and Driscoll sort of became the seventh. Saw a number of snaps at right guard and at right tackle when Lane Johnson got hurt. But I think for the Dolphins, he's coming in to compete as a starting guard, and he's probably a backup as Austin Jackson's backup on the right side.
All right, Chris, briefly before we go out.
Yeah, I mean, he's a mobile guy. He's a diligent guy. Obviously, he's got some athleticism. If you go back to his when he came out of the draft, he did play really well at right tackle at Auburn, but you knew that he was not going to probably do that in the NFL level. And for some reason, the Eagles kept doing that. And I think that even Eagles fans were like, you know, what are you doing? This guy played a lot better at right guard. So I think he's the right side version of Isaiah Wynn. He's basically, I wouldn't be surprised if Butch Berry put his thumb on the scale on this decision. Mm-hmm. And we kind of got that feel last year with Isaiah Wynn that, you know, there was somebody in the coaching staff that, you know, liked him and wanted him to really ultimately get that job. I wouldn't be surprised if a similar thing is happening at right guard. Barring future, acquisitions, or if there is a draft pick, or, you know, whatever.
All right, we're going to go to break. And when we come back, Simon's going to take us through all the draft news of the day. But first, these words.
Are you a South Florida property owner with an insurance claim? Are you dealing with water, mold, or fire damage to your home or business? Are you having trouble locating a 5-star rated general contractor that is fully licensed, certified, and insured? If the answer is yes, then Water Cleanup of Florida is here for you 24 hours a day. With over 60 years of combined experience, Michael, Robert, Jorge, and their team is prepared to handle any size property damage disaster. When an unexpected damage occurs to your home or business, you need specialized, fast, and reliable services. Water Cleanup of Florida understands the impact and stress an unexpected disaster may cause. Their objective is to make the cleanup and insurance claim process painless and hassle-free. Water Cleanup of Florida is also a licensed general contractor, so they provide the A to Z service, one-stop shopping that Disney homeowners and business owners require. Water Cleanup of Florida is now an authorized dealer of Eurocraft cabinets, so premier kitchen, bath, and laundry cabinetry, countertops, and other accessories are available for your viewing at their showroom in Boca Raton. Or, do you prefer to shop from your home or office? Then Water Cleanup will send you one of our design specialists to you with samples and products that fit your style and budget. Call Michael anytime on his personal cell phone if you have any questions at 954-579-0356. That's 954-579-0356. Or visit their website at wcufl.com. You can follow them on Facebook and Instagram. And please check out their more than 80 5-star reviews on Google and Facebook. Water Cleanup of Florida. If you have the schmutz, they have the guts.
I'm Jalen Phillips, and you're listening to 3 Yards Per Carry.
Welcome back to 3 Yards Per Carry. Alf is here. He's kind of switched the microphone. I wasn't kind of expecting it, but here we go anyway. We are heading into draft season, boys, and it is pro day season. And the Dolphins have been out and about today. It was the Colorado State Pro Day. Dolphins were in attendance. It was the Fresno State Pro Day. They were there to see the cornerback Carlton Johnson. Joe Barry, the new linebacker coach, was at the Georgia State Pro Day to see John Trey Hunter, who's their exciting linebacker at Georgia State. Ryan Slowick was in Iowa to see Cooper DeJean. The Dolphins obviously had had personnel at the Miami Pro Day, although interestingly, neither Mike McDaniel or Chris Greer were there to see Cam Kitchens run a 4.56. They were at the Syracuse Pro Day, and indeed they were at the Troy Pro Day today. So kind of all bases covered. What's been quite interesting about them, though, guys, is that certainly from reports out of the UCLA Pro Day and some interviews that were done, it seems that the Dolphins are, and I mentioned it in the first half, very, very interested in Leiatu Latu, the UCLA edge. They had dinner with Latu the night before, and they were running the drills at the UCLA Pro Day. They had another, obviously, dinner meeting with him, but they'd met with him before. On multiple occasions. This is a player that certainly looks, you know, as we go through it and we look at the kind of the positions that are being narrowed down, are we going to take a guard? Looks kind of unlikely at this stage, you know. And Latu, when we talk about what we said about Brandon Chubb, about Bradley Chubb, obviously Chubb and Phillips coming back off serious injuries that don't really, you know, you don't really expect guys to hit back their best form in that first year after those two serious injuries. And you know, Latu could go into the mix, you know, with those two and with Shaq Barrett in terms of, you know, what he does. You get on the field early because he, to me, certainly from film study, and I've watched him a lot, but to me, he is the most kind of complete. Maybe he's not the most explosive, but I think he's certainly the most complete, the most pro-ready of the defensive ends in this class. You know, he's not incredibly bendy. His arms aren't incredibly long, and there's the medical concern from a couple of years ago, but he has, you know, he has a graduate degree in rush technique. He's Matthew Judon. He's the craftiest pass rusher in the draft. And I think, understandably, I think the Dolphins, you know, really like him. And you watch what he does in terms of cross chops and the lightning fast hands, and the pressure rate is fantastic, and the arm overs. And yeah, this is a very refined pass rusher. And, you know, I wouldn't be surprised to see him as a Dolphin, but, you know, Dolphins are out and about, boys, and as you'd expect at this time of the year.
Before I get Chris in here, let me ask you one thing about Cam Kitchens.
Yeah.
Is this the largest, the biggest fall from grace as you can? He went from safety one at midseason to a guy that I wouldn't touch until a third day. He's verifiably slow, which means he can't play in half the defensive systems in the NFL.
Yeah, I just wonder, you know, like we talked about Keon Coleman at the combine, the time that he ran the 4.63 or the 4.68 or whatever it was, and then he ran the fastest time during the gauntlet drill of any receiver. And you kind of, I don't think Kitchens plays fast on tape, but I think he's extremely instinctive. And I think that probably counts for something. I don't think you necessarily, you know, before the timing, you'd say he's kind of a true post. You know, he's got that range, the ball skills, the coverability. He keys really quickly in the run game. I just wonder whether or not, you know, high post free safety would seem like the best spot for him, but it's going to be horses for courses a bit in terms of, you know, whether or not teams trust him back there with that lack of elite foot speed. You know, the 4.56 a day is probably, that's a pretty fast track at Miami. And I think his combine time was, you know, I think Matt Lee was really the only Miami player that did themselves any justice at the combine. And he had a terrific performance. And I think is a good center. But Kitchens certainly sort of tanked his, I mean, I think he's probably a day two. He might go in the fourth round. It just depends on how teams view him and whether or not you can kind of protect him a little bit in terms of just that sort of lack of sort of rangy speed that you'd like to see in a pure sort of high post free safety.
Now, I think one thing to keep in mind, and unfortunately, he's not the same kind of player. So the you know, this comparison is not really meant to be an actual comparison. It's more of a perspective thing to keep in mind. You know, once upon a time, the best player on the Baltimore Ravens defense, you know, runs a 4.59 at the combine, goes back to his pro day and tries to run it again and runs a 4.72. You know, that would be Kyle Hamilton, the safety who was absolutely all over the place for the Baltimore Ravens and was Anthony Weaver's, you know, Swiss Army knife, his queen on the chessboard. I mean, whatever. Not literally queen, because Patrick Queen was also there. So I think that, you know, we just keep that in mind. That's to your point, Simon, about like Keon Coleman and whether we're talking about a guy who maintains the speed well on the field versus a guy, you know, who runs the 40 track pretty well and knows his track technique. You know, that's maybe a little bit different. I did have something to point out though about Leiatu Latu in particular, and I do want, you know, it's not that I'm pushing back on him, but I'd love your opinions on it. Well, first off, I mean, his defensive coordinator was D'Anton Lynn, who is great friends with Anthony Weaver, and they've coached together, and you know, that's kind of spoiler. If the Dolphins get Leiatu Latu, it was written. there's that good of a connection between those two coaches. But you know, I look at him, and you know, one of the things that I noticed is when I'm looking at Jordan Morgan tape, and I'm like, you know, Jordan Morgan, left tackle of Arizona. I'm like, you know, man, look at him up against this pro caliber, you know, this top tier defensive end, you know, outside linebacker prospect, Leiatu Latu. You know, Jordan Morgan, he stood up, you know, he held his own. He maybe even dominated. And then you're looking at Talese Fuaga, Oregon State, and you're like, man, look at him against Leiatu Latu. This, you know, that's an elite prospect he's going against. And he just buried him. You know, he just blocked him right out the club. You know, and when you kind of step back, you're like, wait a minute, who has he played? What NFL caliber tackles has he gone against? Because I've looked at the schedule pretty closely. I've looked at his tackle opponents for the most part. He did not even win a single rep against Jordan Morgan. And I have not found a single rep against Talese Fuaga either. And then they, you know, fast forward, they go to the Senior Bowl, and here's a clip making the rounds all over Twitter of Talese Fuaga, you know, burying him in the dirt. And at what point do you start to be scared that this is a guy, you say he doesn't necessarily have elite explosive qualities or elite frame or something, but he's got every move in the book and he's been taught well. Yeah, okay, but where's his ceiling then? You know, what could he project to if he's already pretty well coached? And who is he beating?
Let me ask you this, Simon, before you get to that. You're hell bent on that edge player, and let's say versus off the board, and you're staring at Chop Robinson, who doesn't have the production but has the ridiculous physical traits. And then you have Latu, who has spectacular production, but not as spectacular physical traits as Chop Robinson. Which way are you going? Because I know which way I'm going.
Yeah, I mean, I would always take the good player into. I mean, I'm not saying that Robinson's not a good player, but you know, for me, Robinson's tape is a roller coaster of extremely high highs. You go back to the Iowa game and stretches where he completely disappears. I mean, he had one pressure in six games in a row for Penn State, which is astonishing given you're talking about him in a first round capacity. You know, he has the explosive speed, but I haven't seen overly compelling evidence to say that he's not a Dafe Owe 2.0. Do you know what I mean? Mm-hmm. And actually, I think Adisa Isaac, who plays on the other side, might be a better player. You know, and actually, I think, intriguingly, I actually think that the guys who played behind him especially Denise Sutton at Penn State is probably a better player than Robinson. So that's interesting. Chris, to Chris's point, look, you know, I think that's a very fair. That's what people have said about Latu, and I'm not his agent or his mum and dad, and I'm just, you know, just calling it how I see it. But you know, I think those are very fair criticisms and complaints about his game. I will say that, you know, you go back and I can remember watching Jalen Phillips against Virginia Tech and Christian Darrisaw absolutely eating his lunch for 60 minutes. And Phillips didn't turn out too bad. These are the, even Dallas Turner, most people have Dallas Turner as the number one. I don't see, you know, an incredibly, you know, I don't see a guy who's necessarily going to get 15 sacks a season. I've seen him get taken out of the game by lesser tackles than, you know, Talese Fuaga and Jordan Morgan in terms of, you know, guys in the SEC that have given him some trouble. You know, Javon Foster at Missouri, you know, that was a good battle. And I don't think Dallas Turner would say that he necessarily, you know, won that one. So I think, you know, yes, it's an absolute knock, you know, on Latu. But I do think he has some special talent. And who knows? To me, though, I think it's interesting that I think you can almost pare it down, really. You know, I think we've probably eliminated corner as the first round pick. I think safety probably is out there. You know, maybe the Bullard kid at Georgia, but probably, you know, that would might be with a trade down. I think linebacker is not going to happen because there just isn't there isn't the talent. I think interior defensive lineman, you look at Johnny Newton, you look at Byron Murphy. We talked about edge rusher and wide receiver. I think, you know, Barry Jackson's just talked about it. The Dolphins need a wide receiver, and, you know, there could be a few staring them in the face at 21.
Mm-hmm. Now, just real quick to even argue against myself and argue, you know, in your favor, you know, what was one of the most infamous clips of Vernon Golston's college career? Yeah. was beating the heck out of Jake Long and sacking the quarterback, and you know, that didn't do too well for Vernon Golston as a pro. And of course, Jake Long, injuries notwithstanding, you know, he had a better NFL career than Vernon Golston. So obviously, that, you know, that if you evaluate exclusively in that manner, you're going to run into trouble more often than not. So I'm just kind of playing a little devil's advocate, because I do like watching play out to Latu on tape. It's just, you know, I end up having to ask myself, yeah, but why didn't he, you know, and that's the sort of thing everybody should ask themselves.
Yeah. 23 and a half sacks, 5 forced fumbles, 2 interceptions. Like, you know, the production is ridiculous on Latu's end. One thing on the way out, they re-signed Braxton Berrios. I'm hoping that's not their answer for wide receiver 3. They assure Barry Jackson that it's not. So it's pretty dry out there, Simon, as far as free agents, you know, unless they're going to do something wacky, like an Odell Beckham who said goodbye to the Ravens today. So you got to think that this, like, pick 21 is just blaring at this point, wide receiver, isn't it?
Yeah, or pick 55. It's such a strong class. You know, I mean, I go back and look at just what I'm doing for the draft book in terms of the receivers. And, you know, I say the names out in order, but, you know, Harrison, Roma Dunze, Malik Nabers. I thought it was interesting today, by the way, Daniel Jeremiah saying he thought Nabers would go before Marvin Harrison, which I find fascinating. Wow. But you have those three, you have Brian Thomas, Jalen Polk, Xavier Leggett, Keon Coleman, Ladd McConkey, Troy Franklin, Roman Wilson, Jalen McMillan, Malachi Corley, Ricky Pearsall, A.D. Mitchell, Tez Walker, Xavier Worthy, Javon Baker, you know, Jamari Thrash, Taj Washington, Malik Washington, Jermaine Burton, you know, Rosamie Jacksaint, Brendan Rice, Jerry's son, Aeneas Smith, Johnny Wilson, you know, the Luke McCaffrey, Jacob Cowing. It just goes on and on and on and on and on in terms of, like, and you go right the way down to, you know, I mean, there's a kid at West Florida, John Giles, who I think is a, you know, really interesting play. Cornelius Johnson at Michigan. Ryan Flournoy had a brilliant combine. You know, Anthony Gould, who's a 10.49 100 meter runner at Oregon State, a slot kid. You know, they're just, you know, the class is absolutely rammed full of receivers. So, you know, I think they're going to have a chance at Thomas. They'll probably have a chance at McConkey. you know, it'll be interesting to see where they rate the two Texas guys. It'll be interesting to see where they rate the two Washington guys not called Adunze. It'll be interesting whether or not what they see in Coleman, whether Franklin or Wilson are, you know, it's fascinating. But there is a lot of talent at receiver. But it does feel, guys, like, you know, they're kind of targeting that because the receiver well has dried up unless they're looking for a trade somewhere.
I think I would be staring at wide receiver. I was talking about on Twitter the same thing. And you know, it's not that – listen, the dream for all of us has been let's rebuild that, you know, offensive line unit. It's not that we suddenly think that that's not a good idea. It's that, hey, we're probably about 80% of the way through the offseason right now, I think. And I'm just being realistic. Right now, they're gonna have the draft, and they've got – functionally two picks that really matter in that draft, and then they're going to maybe make a move or two in June, you know, once the dust settles on the Xavier Howard contract. But those will be kind of cleanup moves, historically speaking. So we're almost all the way there. And could they have changed tack and gone with, you know, changed their model, changed their formula a little bit, added some non-core competencies along the offensive line and given us some indications that they're going to go different directions, you know, philosophically? They could have, but they didn't. They signed Aaron Brewer, who is the absolute most, you know, lopsidedly oriented toward this specific system that you can get as a center. They signed a bunch of, you know, they're now in the process of acquiring other kind of veterans at the offensive line level that are on the offensive line unit that, you know, suggest some things about the draft. I think they're heading toward a wide receiver. I think they're heading toward a wide receiver. I think they're heading toward somebody like Brian Thomas Jr., you know, possibly Ladd McConkey. And I love Xavier Leggett. I don't necessarily love A.D. Mitchell from Texas. That's not necessarily my guy. You know, I think that they're heading for that. I'd keep an eye on Xavier Worthy just because of the speed. And we know that, you know, we know what Mike McDaniel is in this regard. This is a wide receiver driven offense. And so now what we just got done talking about with Tyreek Hill, like, we're kind of like, is he even going to be here past this year or past next year? And if you're questioning that, then go ahead and get your Brian Thomas or go ahead and get your Xavier Worthy. Although that will make Simon, queasy. but I mean, you know, I do think that that's where we're heading now.
All right, on the way out, and I think we could end it right here with the Justin Fields trade and the Vikings trade. We got some clarification in the first round, don't we, Simon?
We do. It looks like they're, you know, I think they're making moves for whichever quarterback, you know, it does feel like the JJ McCarthy train is heading north, and just how far north that ends up will be fascinating. You know, is that three New England? Is, you know, where does he end up? And it feels like the Vikings have been heavily linked, but they might have to get in front of the Raiders, and, you know, who knows?
Well, you know me, if it's up to, I think the JJ McCarthy train is headed off the tracks and into a valley and everybody's dying.
Yeah, it's interesting. McCarthy is such an interesting evaluation.
I just don't see it.
Yeah, I mean, I sometimes struggle to see it, but I do see what, you know, I think there are a lot of traits there. And I think you kind of have to look past the numbers. I mean, he has a big arm, first of all. And, you know, I think he was essentially forced in many ways to be a sort of point and shoot passer in a really boring offense. I don't know. I mean, the Sharon Moore offense was pretty dry. And in multiple games, you saw him throwing to his first or second targets that were essentially schemed open. He made a lot of hay work in the middle on crossers and those sorts of things. But he never turned the ball over, throws an extremely catchable pass. Michigan were 15-0, blew out a large part of their schedule. He didn't play very much in the second half. He's an extremely good runner. He's very good in the chaos of the pocket. you know, and he was absolutely clutch on money downs and in money moments. And then there's all the off-field stuff as well, like apparently an incredible leader, a fierce competitor, extremely mature, great work ethic, absolute football nerd, you know, grew up with a whiteboard in his basement when he was, 10, 11 years old, diagramming plays, scribbling stuff in notebooks, football-related thoughts. He had his first offer from Iowa State. Matt Campbell offered him a full ride scholarship before he even started in high school. So, you know, he's a very interesting prospect. I'm kind of on the fence with him. I have, you know, some of his tape is excellent. Some of you just thinking, I'm just not sure I see it here, but we'll see where he ends up.
And you think the Bears did the right thing, right?
Yeah, I mean, I think the reaction in Chicago has been fascinating because they clearly love Fields generally. I was surprised at the compensation, but it was clear there was no real market for him. I think he's ended up in a really good place. I wouldn't be surprised if he was the starter, beating out Russell Wilson, to be fair. I thought it was very interesting that Albert Breer said there were four other teams involved in terms of potentially trade. I'd love to know who those four other teams were. I just don't think you pass up on Caleb Williams. You know, I think he's such a dynamic skill set. He's as Mahomesian as we've seen since Mahomes came out. I wonder, we've talked about it before, how much of that kind of sandlot mentality, sandlot football, is truly translatable, and whether or not he can be coached into just doing the simple thing, because it seemed like on every single play he wanted to do something spectacular, and sometimes it's just easy to either, you know, throw it away and live another down, or, you know, just take the easy completion, which he never seemed to do. But he's got such ridiculous talent that, you know, you'd be foolish to pass that up. Plus, Chicago's a great town, so, you know, what's not to love?
Yeah. Well, I think just on that note, when Caleb, I love him. I've loved him, you know, for a couple of years. I don't love to toss accolades up there. Oh, he's the best prospect I've ever seen and stuff like that. Like, that's not, I think that's pointless, but, like, you know, clearly a number one overall type of prospect. And I 100%. Think it's worthwhile, but, you know, when we're talking about the Sandlot game and the coaching and stuff like that, I just always bring it back to, you know, you have to keep in mind what Patrick Mahomes was when he was coming out of college. You know, he was playing in a Sandlot because he didn't have much choice.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. You know, he was playing behind an awful offensive line unit and Cliff Kingsbury's offense with those wide splits, and he was not protected. He did not have a pocket to speak of, you know, and go back to another success story, Josh Allen, and what was he at Wyoming? Like, he was definitely a sandlot ball quarterback for sure, but he didn't have a choice. You know, this is a Wyoming, especially in that last year when they lost, Wyoming lost everybody. You know, they lost everybody on that offense to either the NFL or graduation. He didn't really have a whole lot of choice about how he was going to play. Either he was going to, you know, do it all himself, or it wasn't going to get done. And you know, is that the case with Caleb? That's where we have to be discerning about Caleb Williams. Is that really the case? Is that his mentality? Because, it, you know, it makes me think back to another guy who played a lot of sandlot, which was Zach Wilson, behind the BYU offensive line. Now, that BYU offensive line was good, and they didn't face anybody, you know, as far as pass rush was concerned. So he could have read Tolstoy back in the backfield if he wanted to. And he played playground ball because he wanted to play playground ball, you know? And so, you know, that's, I do continue to see things through that lens whenever I view these quarterbacks. You know, that said, I do love Caleb Williams. So,
yeah, he's pretty much the only guy that I'm pretty sold on. The rest I can pick holes into, but we're gonna have plenty of time to talk about all these quarterbacks, running backs, wide receivers, tight ends, all the positions, as April will be draft intensive. I believe we have only one more show where we're gonna devote time to free agency. Then we'll take a break, and then we'll get into the draft full time in the month of April, leading up to those 3 days, the 25th, the 26th, and the 27th in Detroit. You going, Simon, to Detroit?
I've been to Detroit, but I'm not going to the draft. But it's a good city, Detroit.
Oh, okay. I've never been. It has a terrible reputation. It has a terrible reputation.
Yeah, it did used to have a terrible reputation, but I left my phone on a bar there and got in the car and started to drive off and realized. And I came back and one of the kindly patrons was holding it for me, which I thought was very nice. They could have easily stolen it and ruined my entire life, but no, it was there.
Nice. All right. So we'll talk to you later on this week, but till then.
Thanks for listening to 3 Yards Per Carry. You can subscribe via iTunes, on Podbean, or your usual podcast provider.